defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report. Today, February 19th, 2016, unless, of course, you're listening on Red State Talk Radio Studio B, which I hope you are. In that case, it's about 1 a.m. on February 20th. Today is Friday. It's been a really long week. I feel like I say that every Friday, but we have a few big things to get to today. We have Donald Trump versus the Pope. Ding, ding, ding. We also have Justice Scalia being buried tomorrow, sans the presence of President Obama. Also, are cops still a little peeved about this Beyonce halftime show at the Super Bowl? Yeah, they are, and they're going to let you know all about it, and so will I. But first, let's do the same thing we always do at the beginning of every show and salute our great nation with our Pledge of Allegiance. Alright, the Pledge of Allegiance always brought to you here on the Rhino Report by the kids. Like always, we say the pledge because when we grow up, we just stop saying it. We don't say it when we get to work in the morning. We don't say it when we're sitting in traffic. Well, I mean, I guess most of us don't. Maybe I do. Maybe I'm a little weird. But I like to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I think it's good for us. It's good for the soul. It's good for the cockles. It's good for a lot of things. Alright, so Antonin Scalia, he's laying in the Supreme Court today, surrounded by over 100 former and present law clerks. Also, the 8 sitting justices are there also. Very solemn day at the Supreme Court. Black is draping his chair. It's also draping the entrance to the Supreme Court. We saw this not too long ago when Judge William Rehnquist passed away. I think that was 2005, I'm sorry. And here we are again today. The president will be stopping by at some point, and Michelle Obama will be stopping by later on today to pay their respects to Justice Scalia. I almost said Rehnquist. I don't know. It's been a long week. So this is this wouldn't be completely newsworthy. Not the fact that Justice Scalia passed away. That's very newsworthy. But the president going today to pay his respects really shouldn't be newsworthy because it's something the president does. When somebody within a high level of government or a leader of some sort passes away, the president of the United States pays their respects. It's respectful. Well, it's making big headlines today because it's been reported that the president will not be attending the funeral tomorrow for Justice Scalia. He will send Joe and Jill Biden, of course, the vice president, to attend the funeral on behalf of the White House. And you know what was funny about this? Not that this is a funny situation, is that during a press conference with Josh Earnest yesterday, one of the reporters wanted to confirm that that the president wouldn't be playing golf instead of attending the funeral. And Josh Earnest couldn't even say no. He couldn't even say, no, the president's not going to play golf. I mean, he probably won't. But why can't you just say no? Why are the optics so bad with this presidency? The optics are terrible. They're absolutely terrible. He was playing golf when he learned of Scalia's passing, waited to finish his round before making a few remarks. And then someone in the press corps asked about whether he'd be playing golf tomorrow, Saturday, instead of going to the funeral, and they just couldn't say no. Why couldn't they just say, you know what? He has a full schedule. He's going to pay his respects today. Unfortunately, we have things that we can't move around. The justice would understand. You know, we have presidential priorities. You know, some way of wording this so it wouldn't sound so bad. But he couldn't commit that the president wasn't going to play golf. It's not often that I'm for a lack of words. But when it comes to this, that is inexcusable. The president should be there. He should be at the funeral. One of the 11 most important, most powerful people on this planet passes away. And you can't take an hour out of your day to go and worship, to go respect the life, to go honor a life of a man who committed or who dedicated his entire life to public service. Justice Scalia was a conservative titan, defender of the Constitution. And I think it's important that Joe Biden's going. I'm happy Joe Biden's going. You know, for all the quirky things that Crazy Uncle Joe does, he's not a terrible face to have around. He says a bunch of stupid things, and we could all make fun of him. But he does what he's supposed to do as the vice president. He made one of his best speeches ever. I think it was about 3 months after the Boston Marathon bombing. That was a touching, moving speech. He did a really good job with it. And he's going to show up to the funeral tomorrow with his wife, Jill. And he's going to mourn. And he's going to pay his respects. And he's going to do what a presidential type figure should do. Why can't the president do that? Why can't the president? We're hearing all about how he's willing to meet with the group Black Lives Matter, but he's not willing to go to the funeral of a great constitutional defender. You know, if this was one of the big liberal judges on the bench that had passed away, you think Obama would be there? Yeah, he'd be there. He'd be the first one there. He'd be sitting front row. And had a liberal judge or jurist died George W.'s tenure as president, he definitely would have gone. Because that's what the president does. That's what they have to do. They don't surround themselves like Obama does at these college commencement addresses with pillars and banners looking all king-like, which I know the president loves. He loves looking like the king, King Obama. I don't like this. I don't like that he can't go to the funeral. And maybe he'll prove us all wrong. Maybe he wants all of us pundits to get all riled up about this. And then he'll make an appearance tomorrow. I hope so. I hope we're wrong. I really do. You know, it's not often that when you put on a headset or you turn on a microphone and you go on air that you want to be wrong. You know, like the tagline to this show, always right. I want to be right. In sort of a double entendre type of way. But I want to be wrong here. I don't want to be right. I want to think that our president cares about one of the three branches of our government set forth by our founding fathers. Cares about the lifelong service of a civil servant. Someone that spent the better part of three decades defending what our founding fathers fought for. This is too much of a political statement, okay? We've had the bad optics with playing golf when we had journalists beheaded. We've had all of these bad optics. We have there's pictures of the president with his wrong hand over his heart. I mean, have you seen those pictures before? Him and Michelle, both with their left hand over their chest as opposed to their right hand. There's so many bad optics. And I don't think it's something that they really care about. Maybe they want the bad optics. Maybe this has gotten to the point where there's no more legacy for Obama to worry about. And now he just wants to be a figure we talk about in a controversial sort of way down the line. much like the case I made about Bernie Sanders not wanting to win the nomination, he just wants to be a figurehead, a leader of a group that people look back on 30 or 40 years from now and say he started the socialist movement in this country, which we all know that's complete hogwash. That's not true. Bernie Sanders has not started the socialist movement. Let's be clear about that. But that's what he thinks. That's what he wants to be remembered as. Maybe Obama knows that there are just no policies that have come to fruition, that have worked, that have benefited the people he wanted to benefit. Everything has failed. And maybe he just wants to be known as a very divisive, controversial president. Maybe somehow that forwards the whole idea of racial inequality. Maybe he thinks people will look back and say he was a divisive president, or if you think he was a bad president, it's because you don't like black people. Maybe that's the reason for all the bad optics. I don't want to think this way. I don't. But what else can you think? And the son of Justice Scalia, Eugene, the oldest son, is really not very happy that people are talking about this these conspiracy theories. He says they're hurtful. He said in a quote to Laura Ingraham on her radio show, "It's, I think, a distraction from a great man and his legacy at a time when there's so much to be said about that and to help people even more fully appreciate that." And on a personal note, I think it's a bit of a hurtful distraction for a family that's in mourning. Right? He doesn't want people talking about the conspiracy theories about maybe there's a pillow found over his father's head that morning at the ranch in West Texas. But now you have this report of a pillow. You have the lack of autopsy, which should have happened. One of the 11 most powerful people on this planet passes away out of nowhere, and there's no autopsy. And now the president not going to the funeral. What are we supposed to think? Tell me. I'm open to hearing it. And this just can't be a conflict issue. Listen, if you're unsure whether or not you should go to a funeral, you should go. You should go. All right? So this means he just doesn't want to go. It's not that he's unsure. He doesn't want to go. What is the reasoning? What's the reasoning? People who never knew the man, who never even shook his hand, never looked at him eye to eye, never stood in front of his court, pled a case in front of him, are lining up around the block to pay their last respects. People who didn't even know him. But our president, who knew him, you have to assume they've spoken, doesn't want to go to the funeral. And we can't even get confirmation that he won't be playing golf. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Rest in peace, Antonin Scalia. God has another warrior on his side up there in heaven. And we're all praying for you. So, let's move on from this. Because it's not something that I enjoy talking about, and I don't think you enjoy hearing about it. I wish there was a different way to think about this, a different way to remember a man who's done so much good, other than there may be something a little rotten in Denmark here. Let's hope not. Let's hope not. So, on Saturday, after Scalia's passing, we had the debate in South Carolina where CBS, the moderator, had brought up to each of the candidates what they would do, what they think President Obama should do regarding nominating somebody new to fill the vacated seat, the now vacated seat. And most of them said, well, it should be held off. I believe Kasich and Jeb had said that it's the president's right to go ahead and nominate somebody, but the Senate should still hold off on confirming anybody. And we heard some pretty strong words. You know, we heard some strong words from Mitch McConnell, the, of course, Senate Majority Leader. He said, The American people should have a voice in the selection of their next Supreme Court justice. Therefore, this vacancy should not be filled until we have a new president. Now, I think that sentiment is echoed by a lot of people. Mainly people on the right, and even maybe even your more moderate Democrats, if there even is such a thing anymore. They echo this also. That here we are in the final 11 or 10 and a half months, or whatever it is. I'm sure someone has a countdown out there. I'm sure they do. And regardless of the sitting president in their final year, they shouldn't be making any nominations or any appointments. This is what worries me. Maybe an appointment during recess, when Congress goes into recess for the summer, an appointment there. I wouldn't discount that happening. Although the White House said it won't happen. When was the last time in the last 7 years you could trust the White House? But we're starting to see some cracks in the armor here. Whatever light little armor the Republicans were wearing for, oh, what is it now? 6 days? We're starting to see some cracks. You know, we have the Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And they're saying that they'd be open to at least having a hearing. This has also been echoed by Senator John Cornyn of Texas and Orrin Hatch of Utah. That they'd be open to maybe having a hearing, seeing what's what. What happened to this strong line? What happened to this stand the Republicans told us 6 days ago that they were going to take? You know, a lot of us took to social media, we took to Twitter, and we said, wow, finally McConnell might be growing a pair. Finally! After 2 years, after a mandate from the right in 2014 to change the way Republicans do business, we might finally have a stand. And now we're starting to see some glimmers of light through the armor, starting to break down just a little bit. And now, Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid is not surprised. He said the Republicans would eventually cave in. They'd eventually cave in. He's not surprised by this. He has seen Republicans, McConnell, Boehner, even Paul Ryan, cave in time after time after time. And these people wonder why a guy like Donald Trump is doing so well. They wonder why an outsider, a hated guy, like Ted Cruz, is doing so well. And why Jeb and Marco and Kasich can't muster, you know, 25% combined in most polls. Because we are sick of it. We are sick of people that we are electing to do the things that they say they're going to do. We're sick of them not keeping to their word. You know, most of you out there, well, I'll say all of you out there who have friends, good friends, lifelong friends, whether it be from high school, from grade school, from college, wherever, friends you've had for more than 10 years, why are they your friends? Because you can trust them. Because you can tell them something and they won't go blab it around town. Or you can go to them for advice and they'll give it to you. They'll give it to you straight. You know, we've all had those friends that kind of sugarcoat things and they're sort of wishy-washy. And a lot of times these friends don't last very long. But your good, your true, dyed-in-the-wool friends are the ones you can trust. We're learning we can't be friends with any of these politicians. We just can't be. They think that when we say we'll vote you out in your next re-election, that we'll put up a good conservative primary candidate, they think we're lying. They don't think we'll do it. And you know what? They're right in the aspect of we don't have the funding to do it, but we have the heart to do it. We have a heart they'll never have. We have the passion that they will never have. It is crucial that the next president of these United States addresses the idea of term limits. Because if there were term limits, all of this goes away. It all goes away. career politicians have been the downfall of this country. Now, if you look back to the early 2000s, okay, the Democrats went through a very similar sort of issue. They started to push more to the left. So a lot of these sort of moderate Democrats started finding themselves out of a job. Their electorate got together and said, we want to push more to the left. We need a more progressive agenda. And they voted a lot of these people out. You had some people that hung around, your Harry Reids, your Pelosi's. They hung around just because of sheer popularity in their areas. But now the Republicans don't think that their electorate have the balls to do the same thing that the Democrats did. But they are severely wrong. Look at all the problems Donald Trump has. Look at all the things he misspeaks about. The vagaries he throws about. Lack of any real substance. And he is still crushing any establishment politician. He's crushing them. It's not even close. Because people are just so sick of what's going on. This is more of a vote. This primary is more of a vote against McConnell than it is against Hillary Clinton. If you believe she'll be the nominee, which I think is yet to be seen. This is more, if you look at a place like New Hampshire, live free or die, right? The great state of New Hampshire, overwhelming support for Donald Trump. South Carolina, all right? We're going to talk about the polls in a little bit. But for a week now, really, this is like your power hour, right? This is your last week before the primary. Jeb Bush brings in the big guns. Donald Trump had a terrible debate. Terrible debate. Jeb brings in the big guns with a very popular George W., and he hasn't made up any ground. In fact, all the internal polling these campaigns have, whether they're willing to release it or not, says the biggest mover is Ted Cruz. Isn't Ted Cruz like the most hated man in Washington? He's starting to pick up a lot of ground also nationally. Well, we're going to get to these polls in a little bit. But the establishment Republicans in this country are on life support. They're on life support. And as much as Reince Priebus and Mitch McConnell and these guys want to tell you how powerful they are, that they run the country, they'll run the election, because you've even seen the RNC's influence in these debates. Don't tell me for a second each candidate gets 10 tickets. Listen, maybe they get 10, maybe they get 20, maybe they get 100, whatever. The rest of the seats are filled by the RNC. You just can't wait online to get into one of these debates. You have to be, you know, you have to be a local leader or a councilman or a councilwoman or... You just can't wait online to get in. Even at St. Anselm's, the college in New Hampshire, there were very, very few tickets allowed for the actual students that go to that college. The RNC wanted to fill those seats. So they can come out and say, well, each candidate only got 10 tickets. And maybe I believe that. Well, there's not 60 seats in the audience. There's 1,000 seats there. Even from a standpoint of filling the seats, trying to get those boos on TV, the RNC is still trying to tell you that these people aren't good. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz aren't good for this country. And I'm at the point where I think when the RNC tells me somebody isn't good, that's who I want to vote for. That's who I want to put my support behind. I like Trump and I like Cruz. I like them both. I have different reasons for liking each one. Obviously, they are miles apart on a few different issues. But if you're listening to this show, and you're still listening to it, you too believe that the RNC is now a detriment. Reince Priebus, if he has a hair on his chest, he needs to go into Mitch McConnell's office and tell him, under no uncertain circumstances do you even consider a hearing for a Supreme Court nominee. You have to tell the president no. You have to tell Harry Reid no. You have to tell Nancy Pelosi no. I worked in a prison for years. And you know what? The people who don't make it working in a prison, they don't make it because they can't say the word no. Sometimes it's hard when a murderer comes up to you and says something, asks you a question, if they can do something, if they can go somewhere. And you have to say no. That's a hard thing to do. You need to look somebody in the eye who may have killed four or five people and tell them no. The people who can't make it, they just it's that they can't hack it because they don't like walking a tear or because the smell or because the threat of violence. Those things you know when you sign up for the job. What weeds people out in that line of work is telling somebody no. And if our senators and our leaders and our RNC cannot tell people no, then they need to be weeded out. They need to be replaced. That's not up for negotiation. So we need to keep a very, very keen eye on this. Because they will start to do some things that just show a little crack in the armor. Well, we'll just do a hearing. Eh, we'll just talk to somebody. Next thing you know, there's going to be a brand new Supreme Court justice sitting on the bench prior to the election. You watch. We have to hold these people accountable. In 2014, we held some people accountable. But for the most part, those who were incumbents on the Republican side got reelected. The same people who have failed to do their job, failed to represent the direction our party is going in, got reelected. Next time around, we can't be so nice. We can't be. Because what's going to happen is if we keep electing these same people over and over again, it's like the old adage, right? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result makes you insane. It's what someone who's crazy thinks. What's going to happen is there's going to be a faction party. There's going to be a Patriot Party, a real Tea Party, some other organized party that's going to split the vote, and then we're going to lose everything. It's got to be all or nothing, folks. It has to be all or nothing. Unfortunately, that's how our system works. And it was devised that way on purpose. The RNC, the DNC, all the major parties do this on purpose. There's a reason why there aren't third and fourth and fifth major parties. There's a reason. It's not because they can't get funding. Believe me, if they said the right things, they could get the money. This is all set up so that the two parties control everything. And now, here we are heading into the 2016 presidential election, and now we're looking at the potential of replacing two of our three branches of government. Not just one is up for election. If the people can speak and we can make sure that McConnell doesn't allow a vote, now we have two branches of government up for election come November. I do have a bad feeling, though. I do believe that we're going to be in for a rough couple of months. When it comes to McConnell, I believe he will have hearings. He'll allow for hearings. And who knows? Maybe when the Senate reconvenes in September, they could be at that point voting on a new Supreme Court justice. I certainly hope not. But I don't trust McConnell. I don't trust 90%, 95% of the sitting United States Republican senators right now. I don't trust them. And when you lose the trust of the people, things don't go your way sometimes. I don't know. We lost the trust of King George III. See how well that worked out for England. All right. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Donald Trump and the old Pope. All right. We got some things to talk about there. Pope Francis shooting off his mouth. We also have to talk a little bit about these polls. We have some brand new polls. It's the last set of polling data we'll see before tomorrow's caucuses and primaries. We have cops still mad at Beyonce, not real happy down in Florida. And also, we did lose a great literary legend this week. So we'll talk about all that. In the meantime, head over to Twitter. Give me a follow at Rhino on Air. That's at Rhino, R-Y-N-O on Air. Shoot me an email if you want. rhinoonair@gmail.com. If you know somebody in your life who is a law enforcement officer and they have gone above and beyond their call of duty as an officer, tell me their story. Shoot me an email with their story and maybe we'll talk about it on air. All right? So that's that, and I will see you back in about 1 minute.
You are listening to the Rhino Report.
She got chunked.
Always right. Now streaming on Red State Talk Radio.
You are very rude.
Hey guys, your friend and your host, The Rhino, here. There are three ways you can get involved with The Rhino Report and the RWB Network. Here they are. Listen up. Number one, you can be a writer for one of the fastest-growing grassroots conservative media outlets out there. Send me a submission, and I'll read it, and we'll get you published on the RWB Network website. We see hundreds and hundreds of unique hits every single day. Number two, if you want to hear The Rhino Report in your local area, all you have to do is go to your local radio station's website and find the program director's email address. They're always pretty prominent there. Send them an email, say you want to hear the Rhino Report on your local AM or FM station, and I guarantee you, if just one person emails the program director, they will find me and we'll be on your airwaves. The third way to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report and actually make a little bit of money is if you have a little bit of sales experience or even none at all, shoot me an email. We're looking for people who want to sell some advertising space. The show is growing and so can your bank account. So those are three ways to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report. I'll see you back in about 20 seconds.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, welcome back to the Rhino Report. I am your host and hopefully your friend, the Rhino. Before we get into some of the polls, I know some of you are waiting for them and some of you are waiting to fast forward through them. But let's talk a little bit about the papal spat that Donald Trump is having. He sort of backed away a little bit last night. He says he likes the Pope and this CNN town hall thing. They love their town hall, CNN. I don't know. Anyway. He likes them. He doesn't want to fight with them. But the Pope really said the day before that Donald Trump is not a Christian because he'd rather build walls than bridges. We heard all these sound bites. I don't know. Was the Pope less questioning Donald Trump as he was everybody else? I couldn't help but think about it for quite a long time yesterday. Even until last night, I didn't get much sleep. I was thinking about this. I'm a Catholic. I'm a proud Catholic, and the Pope is the leader of my church, right? What was he saying about me? Was he saying that because I believe a sovereign nation needs a wall, that I'm not a good Catholic? I don't know. I had to do a little bit of soul-searching last night. I did, and it was something I never thought that my leader, my religious leader, would make me do. Would make me question my faith. Now, whether this results, because of course Fox and CNN and MSNBC, they all want to know what the political ramifications of this are for Donald Trump. But for me, it was more about what was he saying? What was he saying about my beliefs? Was he condemning the conservative cause? Because we don't want to let illegals into our sovereign nation? Because we value jobs, because we value a vibrant economy, because we value safety, does that make us bad Christians? You know, this Pope has been very controversial. And I didn't really feel the pull to go see the Pope. When he was in New York, he was in Manhattan, and I could have stood in Central Park and waited for him. It would have been a short train ride. I could have done it. But I didn't feel the calling to go do so. And, you know, was it because he's a little, I don't know, I guess for lack of a better word, liberal? Well, no, I just didn't feel it. And I watched the masses and I watched everything. And I was happy he came here, and I was happy that he was well received here. But I don't know. I don't know. This statement about the walls in reference to Donald Trump, I thought was more of a broad smack against conservative Christians in this country. Now, I know I'm not going to make a lot of friends saying that, but I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to tell you the way it is and what my opinions are on it. So Donald Trump backs off a little bit, and he says, I don't want to fight with the Pope. He's a great man. You know, John Kasich said he's pro-Pope. He's pro-Pope, so that's good, I guess. You know what? Even Jeb Bush, who's a devout Catholic, really didn't shy away from Donald Trump's stance either, that the Pope shouldn't be questioning anybody's faith as a religious leader. Jeb Bush says, I think that's a relationship they have with their Lord and Savior and themselves. So I just don't think it's appropriate to question Donald Trump's faith. He knows what his faith is. So here's an opportunity for Jeb Bush to really start driving the stakes into, or putting the screws to, Donald Trump, and he really didn't do it. His faith got in the way. Jeb Bush's faith, because he knows that he's not a bad Christian by believing we need some sort of border. And he had an open opportunity to really put the screws to Trump, and he didn't. So maybe that is one sign that the Pope really did overstep his bounds. He really overstepped his bounds. So that is the story of the Pope and Donald Trump. Let's move on to some poll numbers. We have lots and lots of poll numbers here. All right, let's start with yesterday. Let's go to yesterday. We'll go on the Republican side first. You have a Fox News poll, South Carolina primary. This shows Trump at 32%, Cruz at 19, Rubio at 15, Bush at 9, Kasich at 6, and you also have Carson at 9 there too. Really, Carson has become somewhat of a non-factor in these South Carolina polls. He's trying to poll for the northwestern South Carolina evangelical thing. That's about where his percentage points come from. So Trump leading this Fox News poll by 13 points over Ted Cruz. As I've said before, a lot of these campaigns do internal polling. Well, a lot. They all do it. They all do internal polling. And a lot of them are seeing that Cruz is starting to pick up a lot of speed. After really not doing so terribly well in New Hampshire, these South Carolina and the SEC states could be huge for Ted Cruz. South Carolina poll, Republican poll, also from, this is from ARG. This shows Trump at 34%, Rubio at 22%. Big move for Rubio here. And then you have Kasich at 14%, Cruz at 13%, Bush at 9%. Bush is really struggling to get to break that 10% threshold in South Carolina. He's doing a couple of points better since bringing Brother George W. along, but not a ton. He's getting about the same bump he got from his mother Barbara Bush in New Hampshire, 2 or 3 points. A Harper poll. This is also the Republican poll out of South Carolina. This shows Trump at 29%, leading Cruz by 12. So Cruz has 17, Rubio at 15, Bush in this case has 14, Kasich at 13, and Carson at 8. And then you have the SC House GOP. This is also a South Carolina Republican poll. This is thought of to be a more evangelical poll. It weighs that a little bit heavier. Here you have Trump at 34, and then you have Cruz at 18, Rubio at 16, Bush at 14, Kasich at 9, Carson at 5. All right. If we look out to Nevada, this is a Gravis poll. This has Trump at 39%, followed by Cruz at 23%, Rubio at 19%, then you got to drop all the way back down to Kasich at 9%, and then Carson and Bush tied at 5%. I don't see where Bush thinks he's going to pick up the steam. It needs to be in South Carolina if Jeb Bush is to continue here. This, of course, was a good place for both his father and his brother. But he's just not showing the life he needs to show in South Carolina. Fox News has the Republican presidential nomination poll. This is a national poll. This shows Trump at 36, Cruz at 19, Rubio at 15, Bush and Carson at 9, Kasich at 8. So some of these establishment guys who pick up a little bit of ground here and there, not showing so well nationally. Not showing so well nationally. A CBS poll, also a national poll. This is yesterday. This shows Trump at 35, Cruz at 18. You got to drop back 6 points to find Rubio at 12, Kasich at 11, Carson at 6 over Bush. Bush has 4. 4% in this national CBS poll, Trump at 35%. There are a lot of head-to-heads here also. Fox News and Quinnipiac did. Of course, in the Quinnipiac polls, the Democrats win most of the head-to-heads, and in the Fox polls, the Republicans win most of the head-to-heads. So, head-to-head at this point is really not that big of a deal. It's really not something I would put a whole lot of faith into, personally. All right, let's go up here to today. We have an Emerson poll. Now, Emerson has been pretty good. The last two states with the Iowa caucus and New Hampshire primary, Emerson was right on. And I was the first person to criticize Emerson before the Iowa caucus, saying that they were way off. In fact, I was way off. But Emerson, this poll typically comes out a day or two before the primary or the caucus, and they've been right on. You have Trump at 36, Rubio at 19, surpassing Cruz, who has 18. And then you have Kasich and Bush in a dead heat for, 12th place with 10%, Carson at 6. Carson, he's going to need to break 10%. Carson's going to have to break 10% to, I think, continue this. Now, he says he's running not for himself, but because the people wanted him to run. And that may be the case. He had good numbers, if you recall, at the end of last summer. He had good numbers when he first announced. It was Trump and Carson were at the top. You had Rubio and Cruz and Bush still pretty far behind. But Carson, after all of these issues with trying to hit his mom with a hammer and stab some kid with a knife, just wasn't able to answer those questions very well because they were in his book. And also, in the first couple of debates, really showed a weakness for foreign policy. But give him credit. He has shown now a strength for foreign policy the last few debates. Maybe a little too late for Carson, which is unfortunate. I believe Ben Carson would be a great president. But he's going to need to break 10% here. South Carolina Republican poll. This is NBC, Wall Street Journal, Marist. This has Trump at 28, Cruz at 23, Rubio at 15, then you have Bush at 13, Kasich at 9, Carson at 9, and so you're starting to see the last two polls, NBC and Emerson, showing Bush at 10 points or better, 10 in the Emerson, 13 in the NBC Wall Street Journal Marist poll. This will not be enough. I do not see Jeb Bush winning in South Carolina. I think he is probably pigeonholed for fourth place here. I think your real battle is going to be between Cruz and Rubio for second. Trump is seeing maybe a little bit of a little decline for Trump. He's been hovering between 30 and 35% in these South Carolina polls for a long time. But as most skeptics and pundits are saying, he's going to have to break that 40% barrier. Trump has not broken that 40% barrier really in any poll. A few outliers here and there. Your internet polls, they've shown Trump as high as 45 or 50%. Those polls notoriously not reliable, which is why the Democrats use those to put into their polls sometimes to water them down. We've been over that in the past. There was a NBC poll that showed Cruz above Trump nationally. This came out, I believe it was 2 days ago. Real Clear Politics, for some reason, doesn't have it on here anymore. It's not on. Oh, I'm sorry. It is right here. This is this has this was from Thursday. Okay, so yesterday shows Cruz at 28, Trump at 26, Rubio at 17, Kasich 11, Carson 10, Bush at 4. This is the national poll again. NBC News, Wall Street Journal. I think this is good news for Cruz. Cruz likes seeing this stuff, right? He's going to get some more donations because of it. It gives him a little wind in his sails. However, I do believe this may be an outlier. Every other national poll has Trump in the lead, with Cruz somewhere between 8 and 10 points behind, if not more. But still, maybe NBC is seeing something in their polling sampling, or in their algorithms that they use, their formulas, whether it's a plus 6 or a plus 7, that we're not seeing. And you know what? We saw that in Iowa, where all of a sudden, Cruz kind of peeked his head above the surface into first place, and he wound up winning. It wasn't by a ton, but he won. It was 3-4 points, whatever it was. So maybe NBC is seeing something, but just based on every other poll and reputable polls, I do believe this may be a one-off, an outlier, whatever you want to call it. For you guys who are in the Cruz crew, I'm happy for you. I definitely am. Cruz would be an outstanding president. So let's see how this goes. Maybe if the next couple of polls after South Carolina show that Cruz is really starting to pick up speed against Trump, because I think Trump will see a bit of a hit nationally coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Maybe Cruz has that spot. Maybe NBC is a little ahead of the curve. Very possible. Very possible. So those are the polls for on the Republican side. On the Democrat side, there's no contest in South Carolina for their primary next week in South Carolina. Clinton at 60, Sanders at 32. Sanders not doing well in South Carolina. He's not going to do well in the southern states. He's polling very well nationally, though. Nationally, a couple of polls came out in the last day or two, and he's higher than Clinton. He's higher than Clinton. You have a Fox News poll has Sanders at 47 and Clinton at 44. So that's two or three polls now are starting to show that maybe the Clintons are a little susceptible to some socialism. We're starting to see that. There was an article in the paper the other day, or I guess it was yesterday. Hillary Clinton thinks she hasn't lied about anything. She's been truthful the whole time. We all know that is completely false. Completely false. And I think some of these Democrats are starting to see that maybe we can't trust this person. It's taken them long enough, but maybe they're starting to see that. A Sanders campaign, national campaign for Sanders, would be a godsend for Republicans, because that wouldn't even be a close election. However, that will never happen. I believe 85 or 86 superdelegates now signed on for Clinton. So she has only won one contest by the skin of her teeth. She lost in big fashion to Sanders in New Hampshire, yet she has like 300 more delegates than Sanders has. So there is no way the Democrats would let Sanders be the nominee. I think we see here in Colorado that Sanders is now ahead of Hillary in Colorado. That's not all too surprising. Colorado has a shifting demographic, has a large homeless problem. It has a the idea of free stuff goes over real well in a state like that. You folks in Colorado, I know you love your state, but maybe it's time to think about if you're a good, hardworking citizen in Colorado, maybe it's time to think about a vacation house somewhere else. And because I think the socialists may be taking over your state even more than you originally thought. All right. We've seen videos the last two or three days about Hillary and these coughing fits. I mean, she's coughing left and right. She can't do a 10-minute speech without coughing for 5 minutes. What is going on with her? I'm not a doctor. I'm far from it. Although I may have told a couple of girlfriends that maybe I'll take a look. I'm a doctor. But something's going on here. Whether, I don't know, maybe you think it's heart disease? Do you think it's something else? Is it bronchitis? What is it? What's going on? All I know is that when Senator John McCain was running for president in 2008, we saw over 1,000 pages of his medical records. Because, of course, the question was there. He was He's no spring chicken. He wasn't then, and he isn't now. So he wanted to be forthright, and he let his medical records go, and we all got a glimpse into the health of John McCain. But the Clintons, little less anxious to do so. We know Hillary has had some health problems in the past, some of these clots and things of that nature. Again, we never want anyone to be sick to the point of that. We don't want someone to be that sick. We just want someone who's going to be president to be healthy. So we want a healthy president. We don't need the turmoil of having a president, God forbid something happened while they're in office. It's a terrible thing when that happens. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. That should never happen. But so maybe it's time the Clintons start releasing some of these medical records. But we all know how the Clintons are with releasing things. You know, emails, medical records, and so forth. So I don't think we'll ever see them. If we do see them, I wouldn't for a second think that they are real. They'll probably be doctored in some fashion. No pun intended. So yeah, she's having these coughing fits. I know Hannity's been talking about it, and Rush has been talking about it. They've all been talking about it. But we've known for a while now that she isn't, you know, the healthiest horse in the stable. All right. Let's move on to the police. The police are not happy. The Miami Fraternal Order of Police released a press release Thursday stating that they plan on boycotting Beyonce's concert in April. This, of course, after her salute to the Black Panthers during the halftime show at the Super Bowl. The police unions are not real thrilled about this. This was a direct attack, a direct assault on police in this country. Even Beyonce has a concert in Tampa shortly after this planned concert in Miami. The police there have said that they will do their job to act as protection at the concert. However, they are skeptical to do so. They don't really want to do so. And they take, I guess, off-duty officers sign up to work security. They've had none sign up. That's not good. Beyonce and Jay-Z have really made a bed they don't want to sleep in. We all know what happened with Quentin Tarantino. His movie tanked after he went against police. They all had this national boycott of that movie. I don't even know the name of it. Something 8, The Great 8, something like that. Tanked, didn't do so well. I don't know that the police can tank Beyonce's career, but I do know that these police officers, they have families and they have kids, and they may just stop buying this stuff for their kids, the CDs, the whatever else, the merchandise that the Jay-Z and Beyonce brand put out, so they can hurt them on more than one front, you know? Most cops, I mean, here in New York anyway, have large families. We come from large families. And so cops still not happy about the Super Bowl performance. They haven't gotten an apology. They've gotten nothing. But I wouldn't expect a liberal Black Lives Matter activist like Beyonce and Jay-Z to apologize for anything. They think they're doing no wrong. In fact, they think they're doing a whole lot of right. All right. Lastly, before we end the show today, we lost Harper Lee. Harper Lee died at the age of 89. Of course, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird and the newly released book in 2015 that came out that was called Go Set a Watchman. This was a sequel to the To Kill a Mockingbird, or Mockingbird as it was titled. She thought it was lost. Her lawyer found it and resurrected it, and they released it in 2015. Nell Harper Lee was born in Monroeville, Alabama, on April 28th, 1926. She was the youngest of four children, and she will be sorely missed in the literary community. All right. So, God bless, Godspeed to Harper Lee, a true American literary genius. All right. So, that's all we have for today. Today's show, the week is over. We'll see you back bright and early Monday. You can always find us on TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, all the applicable podcast sites. Tell your friends about the Rhino Report. We appreciate all the listens, all right? So for now, a huge thank you to all of those serving our country at home and abroad, and also a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for your hard work. We all appreciate it, and we all depend on you. So for now, God bless all of you. God bless all of your families. And until Monday, I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
been listening to the Rhino Report. Always right.